of the big world, and it does seem often that it's a complicated world, isn't it now, huh? I mean, when you look at it all and all the moving pieces, and of course, look at your own life, which is far more important, right? And you look at how complex this whole thing is, you know? But then let me just put this out here. Now, then we go through our day-to-day life. We wake up in the morning and, you know, of course, none of us are perfect. I mean, there's not a soul I know that really is perfect. But yet we have a tendency to judge other people. It's so easy to do that. You know, isn't it, right? Well, look at that funny person. That one's too fat. That one's too short. That one is, you know, got a bad look on their face. And, you know, sometimes I hear the youngsters do that, the kids, and it rattles me a bit. And I say, hey, wait a minute. Don't say that. You don't even know that person. Why would you say that? And you know that old saying, and I know we love these isms on this show, but, you know, what is it? You walk a mile in the shoes, the moccasins, or whatever the hell it is, or barefoot in the desert or something. I know Taz will help me with that in just a moment here. But never should you walk a mile in somebody else's shoes and then pass judgment. Maybe perhaps that's the message. Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. And today on Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure, we're going to break the hate cycle, friends. We're going to talk about all of this stuff, break the hate cycle, and potentially stop prejudging everything. Maybe that's the way to size this up a little bit. Please welcome to the show here, one of our co-hosts today on Life, Liberty, Taz Thornton. Well, this is a subject that's near and dear to her because she's all about being positive and being self-reliant on one's own feelings and being in touch with yourself before you pass, well, any advice on to somebody else, perhaps. She's a best-selling author, UK's number one inspirational breakthrough speaker. Missy Crutchfield is here. She's co-founder of Gandhi's Bee Magazine and of Gandhi Global Center for Peace. And the lovely Shauna Peters is here. She's an inner world explorer and guide, an intuitive natural health practitioner. And really, we've got it all covered because Taz is from the UK, Shauna's from Costa Rica, Missy's from the States here. And as you know me, I'm just floating above near the space shuttle here, ladies. So somewhere above the earth here. But all right, so Taz, that's the setup I put here because, I mean, in my business, you know, in the opinion news business, Taz, everybody has an opinion, keep in mind, okay? We all have an opinion, and we all pass judgment very easy. You know, you stink, you suck, I don't like you. Your political belief is in the toilet. Oh, you rot. And same to you. Let me tell you about your mother. Then it always comes back to your mother, Taz. Let me tell you about your mother. What? What's the matter with my mom? You know? I mean, isn't that the case? And it's the kids. It was always about your, it's like your mother. Your mother is such a shut up already. I'll punch you right in the nose. Taz thought, what do you say to that?
I think that, yes, we all do judge a book by its cover. We're taught to do that. But what I want us to start thinking about more and more and more is drawing a line between judgment and discernment. What do I mean by that? So let me use you as my stooge here for a minute, Malcolm, because, you know, I know you like being the center of attention.
Watch so it, young lady.
So let's say you see Malcolm walking down the street and you're thinking, look at that with his peroxide hair. Who does he think he is? What a jerk. That's judgment as opposed to, oh, wow, that's a different hair colour. Not sure it's for me, but hey, if he's happy doing that, good luck to him. That's discernment.
Yes.
You see the difference? One is looking at someone and immediately taking it into usually the negative, making a snap judgment without going any deeper. One is just accepting that somebody is different to us and then being able to make an informed heart and mind-based decision on how to work with that. Now, I reckon if we could get to the point where we each just breathe for a moment and just look at whether we're judging or whether we're discerning, we could solve so many of the world's problems. I mean, this whole thing, the difference between judgment and discernment, if we all learned that, we could be tackling everything from schoolyard bullying through to racism, homophobia, hey, maybe even terrorism, if we could find a way to talk to each other properly rather than just throw the labels out there. It's something that we're not doing at the moment, is my take on things.
Excellent.
Taz, when you say what you say, interesting that comes to my mind here. Like that person walking down the street, and you draw some criticisms or some thought processes immediately, right? And you put it out there as such, in that negative energy, as we say. Here's the thing, and I hear you. This is, it's a big conversation because it would handle, it would fix a lot of what ails us in a lot of different ways. But here's what I'm really thinking, Taz. Potentially, isn't the problem when one does that? When somebody passes, I'm thinking about even walking into a nice restaurant, Taz, right? And people look and they say, or you can see people talking or what have you. But I mean, let's really talk here. The problem isn't with the person who looks like whatever, however, whoever. The problem really is that's happening here is that people are screwed up, Taz. It's
Absolutely.
their own life that's screwed up. So the people who are so judgmental, darling, I'm telling you. So what I'm saying is, I don't know that you'll ever be able to fix this because basically there's a good percentage of the population that just, they're not using all the marbles. They're not really connecting the dots here.
But
So
that's because we're not taught to. We're not
we're not
taught
taught to.
to understand the difference between judgment and discernment. You know,
Right.
right through from being at school, at junior school, we're all, picking on the kid that has ginger hair, or the one that's wearing the wrong trainers, or the one that wears glasses, or the one that's a different colour torso, or the one that looks a bit too effeminate, perhaps. We're not taught. We just tackle bullying, say, don't do that, don't be a bully. And nobody, as far as I'm aware, is actually actively teaching our kids, hey, this is judgment. This is not the way to treat things. This is discernment. This is how you
You know
recognize
what,
that there are
then?
lots of people different to us.
God, I love this. You know what, then? What you're telling me right now is that in our schools, in our, let's start with our elementary schools, ladies. In our elementary schools, this should be a required class.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Arun Gandhi, Global Center for Peace, and Arun says that the one thing that's missing, well, there's more, but the big piece that's missing in education is we don't teach compassion. So we arm these kids with all this information and ideas and all, but we don't, to go out in the world with that. And often it just turns into greed because we don't have a center and a focus and teach compassion connected with all of these things, this knowledge.
I would, We're equipping our kids for crusades rather than compassion,
yes,
is what's
and
going
I
on.
would say back that it's a, but listen to this, Missy, though. If you think about it in the terms of teaching the kids, right? And I think it would be a lot easier if you take judgment versus discernment. Is that what we're calling it, Taz? Yeah. I think if you put that up there, I'm very serious. Like, all right, you got your math, you got your English, you got your social studies, yeah? And then you've got your class that's called your judgmental versus discernment, and that's a real class. But what I'm saying is, if that was taught to our kids in elementary school, in junior high school, in high school, that there were, so think about this a minute, ladies. If there were principles based around that, now some of the other pieces you talk about, Missy, those would fit into that. But I think the I think if you could nail down this, you're right. You're hun Oh my God. Wow.
Well, I'm going to jump in here and say, I think we need to take it back even farther. I love discernment, love teaching of compassion, but I think it goes even deeper. I think, and I work with this in my practice a lot. It's the core of my practice. And I believe that where we have tendencies for judgment, it is at the spiritual deepest root of who we are. It is the place where we feel separate from whatever it is that you call that's greater than us, whether it's the source, whether it's God. When we feel a separation from that, judgment is one of the very first symptoms, quote unquote, that hops out into the world to present to you, you're feeling separate from, the greater collective. And so I really think it's much more than teaching a skill, and I think it is much more about teaching us about who we are.
Absolutely. But to circle back around to that, if we had a clearer idea of judgment versus discernment, a lot of the fears that we all have about being our true selves perhaps wouldn't materialize in the fashion that they do.
Because we'd be able to self-identify some of these. things. I love this quote that I came across, Taz, when you put this topic out. It's, if you care about people's approval, you become their prisoner.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And we've all been that at times, haven't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and I'm not going to say I'm totally out of that either. I mean, let's be real. That still happens to me. You know, it's just a process. Now I'm a little bit more aware. Maybe it takes me an hour to figure it out. Maybe it takes me a couple days, maybe just a minute. I'm just more aware, but it still happens. And we need to be aware of that in ourselves.
Sure. Look at social media. We're all seeking likes and followers and all of that.
I was writing about that just this morning. Yeah. It's all about how many likes we can get. You know, we can feel so popular because we've got like 5,000 friends.
Right.
You've never met any of them. And they're only friends because you wrote something controversial and they clicked a like. That's right. not the same thing. That's not a relationship.
Yes.
Exactly. Or is it?
Yeah. You know, I was doing, I was teaching a course for kids just out of high school, and then they went on a canoe trip where they were going to have no cell reception. And the guides that were going with them said, you know, you're going to feel depressed for a few days because you're not hearing the ding on your phone and you're not getting the dopamine rush that happens every time that ding goes. So just expect it. You know, we're living on that high.
Yeah. We really, really are. You know, there's a 13-month spiritual development program I run. And one of the rules we have is that we can't take mobile phones or smartphones into the teaching areas and into the kind of communal areas.
Brilliant.
And every time we start this program without fail, somebody goes into a panic. You know, we sleep in a yurt, in a gur. There are no safes. We don't have locks on the doors. But this phone cost me a lot of money. Where can I put it? Well, you can lock it in your car if you like. But somebody might break in and break into all the cars. Chill your beans, baby. You know, all the time we're expecting bad stuff to happen. It's going to happen. And that's another issue with judgment again, isn't it? Because we're judging that the outside world are going to come in and upset our apple cart. And what if they're just not? What if we're attracting all this negativity towards us by our expectations, which all comes back to judgment? And yes, to pick up on what Shauna was saying, a feeling of separation. How do we heal this? Mm-hmm. What do we do?
Yeah. When we're living with that sense of separation, right, we have to really guard ourselves. There's nothing that has our back. You know, we have to live in that state all the time. It's such a different state of being when you are feeling fully connected and or feeling separated. It's just an entirely different experience of the world.
Where do you come from, Shauna?
Where am I originally from? I'm Canadian.
No, where does that feeling of separation come from?
I'm sorry.
That's
where
okay.
Where does it come from?
We love that you're Canadian. You know,
I think actually, in my idea, is that, you know, our closest experience in human form to feeling fully connected with source is when we're in our mother's womb, and that even can get messed with a little bit. And that feeling of separation actually begins at the moment of birth, right? Suddenly, you know, there's a different feeling on my skin. Suddenly, I have a sensation in my stomach that I don't like. And is it going to be met or is it not going to be met? So that's really where I think this experience of separation begins to shape our belief systems, which is how we attract what we attract into our lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Missy, what would you say to that?
Well, I agree completely. And I just keep thinking about when we're separate, we're maybe perhaps feeling insecure, and then we've bought into some ideals on TV that we're supposed to look like this, have this, be this, and it's so out of line with who we really are. So we get caught up in this game that I've got to take you down to bring myself up. I've got to make you look bad so I can look good. And it's crazy. So by being able to identify what's going on, I guess step back and say, you know, I'm good enough and I'm different. I'm unique. I don't look like that. That's good. They look like that. That's good. Or they speak like that, or they come from. So I think cultural literacies are important as well as and that's part of the discernment. I saw a cool list of 7 clever ways to deal with highly judgmental people. I thought I would share And then there's a quote, when you judge another, you do not define them, you define yourself. And yeah. then some of
so
the things,
true.
Some of the things they say on this, don't take things personally, ways that you can sort of pull yourself back from being judgmental and look beyond appearances, right? We're talking about that. And embrace a compassionate attitude. All of this is part of that discernment. Look for the lesson. That's always good advice.
Oh, that's at the heart of everything I do. Even when when the shit hits the fan, instead of pointing the finger and blaming, what did I learn from it?
Yes, and number five, Tez, you say this all the time, the world is your mirror. Number six, and then seven, number six, adopt an attitude of gratitude. If we find thankfulness, and then there's the compassion. It's all connected together. The last one is focus your energy and attention upon those who love and appreciate you. And then your tribe is centered on that gratitude, and then you embody all those other lessons, and we move forward in a positive way.
Well, what I do, Missy, is I just don't hang around with screwballs.
No.
You see? Yeah. I mean, I don't hang. I mean, negative energy, negative Taz. I don't.
Yeah.
How do you get to the point where you judge that somebody is a screwball?
Well, because I'm careful about who is in my circle. In other words, how do you judge? I can tell you how you judge. You judge because they're negative. It's always pestered. They're always got their head up their ass. They're always pessimistic.
Yeah.
They're very negative. They again, these are the people that go around life that are very critical of other people. They're not, but everything, another word out of this, Taz, is gossip. Gossip. Gossip is evil.
Oh,
it's dirty.
God,
but you say how. That's how. What I'm saying is this kind of behavior is cancerous to me. And so in order to stay uplifted and positive, because back to what Yvette would always talk about, that energy around us is highly important.
Yes.
So the way to... what I tend to do, ladies, is personally, I disengage. I don't stay engaged with people that are at that level. You know, I just don't. And so back to you are what you are, and the way people judge other people, and like you were just saying a moment ago, the problem isn't with, the people they're judging. The problem is with them. I said this when we opened up this conversation.
Yeah.
That really is the problem. It's them.
It is. And another thing I always say is I don't believe there's any such thing as a superiority complex. There's only ever an inferiority complex.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Think about that one for a minute. And to just pick up on one you just said, Malcolm, I was listening to a video that Gary Vaynerchuk put out. I think most people listening to this will probably have heard of Gary Vaynerchuk. Excellent marketing guy, really knows his stuff. And he was saying that he has a way of judging the people that he would see as losers, and he doesn't mean the people who are currently broke, but the people who down the line aren't going to make it. And his way of judging whether somebody is a loser and cutting them out of his circle is if they complain in the first hour of meeting them, they're out. That's it.
I like that.
But it does work. This whole concept of, you cut out the people of you in your life who are negative. You are the sum of the five people that you hang around with. But it's so easy to band that about, isn't it? Because what happens if the people who are really negative is your spouse or your mom or even your kids?
Well, I can answer that.
Always.
Then divorce them.
Yeah, divorce them, yeah, absolutely.
Your mother.
It's not that easy for everyone, though, is it?
Yeah, but you're not a reflection of your family, Missy, when you laugh like that. That's another thing that we should talk about is because I see a lot of people who live their life by their family standards. And they think they're... Mm-hmm. And I hear this, and it drives me crazy. Somehow this saying, and you've heard this saying a million times in your life, that blood is thicker than water. And, that's a relative of mine. Well, that's a...
toothpaste.
So is toothpaste. Well, that's a great saying, Shauna. But when people say that, it's like, so that gives them a license to be an asshole? I don't think so very much.
No.
I'm sorry.
No.
I as a young boy, my family knew I was not normal anyways. And so, back to that whole judgmental thing, Taz, they judged me early on anyways. And so quite frankly, I just don't communicate with any of them today. So I don't have a relationship.
What the hell is normal? What do you mean they knew you weren't normal? What does normal even mean?
Well, I can answer that question as well. Do you always have these difficult questions? But I got the answers, Taz. I'm going to give you the answer just after the pause. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, we are back, friends. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure. And, you know, as you listen, Taz thought and always asked the tough questions. She always said, well, what constitutes normal, Malcolm? Who is it that says that that is normal? And so I would say to our other co-conspirators today, Missy Crutchfield and Shauna Peters, that normal is what society says you're supposed to be. Normal is that you're supposed to act a certain way, you're supposed to be a certain way. Normal is that little Johnny doesn't step out of those boundaries. Normal is that, you know, Susie doesn't express herself. Normal is that they act like everybody else in the playground or the classroom, and they don't step out to be an individual. That's normal.
Well, normal sounds pretty screwed up to me.
Right?
Kind of boring.
It is very boring.
But he expects us to do. That makes me want to do the opposite.
It's what I've been doing all my life, Missy.
Small. If we're not careful, society keeps us small, which goes right back to judgment again, because society at some point has got all these rules. And when we try to dig down and say, why do you have these, that usually people can't come up with an answer other than, well, it says it in the Bible. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't actually say it in the Bible. So why on earth? Why is society trying to keep us small and safe? What is going on? Because that's a massive societal judgment that leaves us all screwed up. And to take that on to another point, you know, we've all heard people talking about the midlife crisis. I don't believe there's any such thing as a midlife crisis. I think the midlife crisis is the biggest trick society has thrown at us. I think what's happening is we get to a certain age and suddenly it starts to dawn with us. It's like a light switch is flicked and suddenly it's as if we have been through all those judgment versus discernment classes. We realise the life we're living is not the one that we want to live. We think, who the hell am I? What's going on? Why are all these things around me that I don't care about? Right. And we want to put it right.
You know what we should say then, Taz?
It's a midlife crisis. Get back in your box.
Right. I think I look at it as any type of sort of crisis in somebody's life. It's a spiritual awakening. And unfortunately, particularly in the West, we just don't have a tradition of wisdom anymore. And so it turns into this thing where we create a lot of people when they're having their quote unquote crisis, create a lot of havoc in their life and the lives of others. And it just does not have to be that way. We just don't have those people who've really stepped into themselves, have stepped into wisdom that can offer you words of guidance or walk with you in those moments so that you can turn it into just, you know, it can be the catalyst of your butterfly coming out of the cocoon. But we just don't know how to do that in our culture anymore.
But isn't it just another way of control? Is it not just another control mechanism so that if we think that we're going mad effectively when we realize that the things we've built up around us, all this materialism doesn't suit us, we need to be put back into our box. You know, the farmers need us to be depressed so they can throw out, you know, their pills. They need the guys to be stressed so they can throw out the little blue pills. Right. You know, the car manufacturers need us to want the Ferrari.
When I was taking my master's in counseling, you know, we talked about how the word for crisis, I think in Chinese, it has, you know, two meanings, danger and crisis. Sorry, that wasn't the word. And so you can go two different directions with that. So to me, many people head down that road where it's just, take the pharmaceuticals to drug it up, you know, buy more stuff, get a younger wife, whatever it is. But there's the other road. And that's what I'm saying. We just are so unaware of that other road, how to take that as an awakening and cultivate it as wisdom so we can grow into something, so that we have something to pass on, so that elders can truly be respected in our society because they've cultivated something that's wonderful and beautiful.
We don't have eldership anymore, do we?
We don't have it anymore. Exactly.
And I think those passage into adulthood, we're missing that too.
Exactly. Exactly. I totally think that. I think that's what happens when we're adolescents, you know, instead of, you know, working through some of the things of our childhood, we all have those things. Instead, we just push them down. We just head into adulthood with a massive backpack of crap on our backs and just keep going at every turning point from there on.
And when is adulthood anyway? Is it when we turn 18? Is it when we leave college?
Definitely,
or is it when we knock up the girl from the supermarket? You know, what
never.
Is it?
Never.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing to aspire to. You know, you have to look long and hard to find somebody that you're like, okay, if I can grow old like that, I'm great with that. You know, you have to look long and hard. It's not inspiring the way we live it in the West. And it's truly sad.
Keep in touch with the child. And back to the site that had the seven lessons from the Purpose Fairy. That's the site. I love this. Mm-hmm. And look for the lesson. And if you think about it, and I think all of us can probably agree on this, but the lesson or the silver lining of some of our experiences, perhaps, I was very bullied. And I was
Me too.
I was different, right? And so it's very painful. But what you learn when you survive, if you survive, is that I am a survivor and I'm a warrior and I'm going to stand up for what's right. And I'm going to make sure if in my power that I can prevent somebody else from being bullied, that I can use these lessons and move forward. So, you know,
you learn to be a bigger bully or you learn to be a doormat. So what tips us into that point where we find ourselves rather than either judging ourselves or judging others and tipping to either side of that knife edge? How did you get to the point where you found yourself rather than either becoming, you know, a victim or a perpetrator?
I don't know. It's a good question. But what popped in my mind first, Taz, is that it was about the time that I started separating from identifying with one religion, one religious box.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't going to let anything control me, even those ideas and doctrines that had been told, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to go to hell. I started stepping back from anything that was told to me in a disciplinary kind of you must or you this will happen to you. So when I questioned that, I think it started coming together.
So
now,
why?
You see, that's a really interesting term for this to take. You know, you just mentioned organized religions there. I mentioned them earlier, and I'm a big believer that there's a world of difference oftentimes between spirituality and religion, but I'm not anti-religion. I'm anti the control from capital T, capital R, the religion, the church.
So well, because, Taz, we're not being respectful of each other anymore. We're just simply not being respectful. Yeah, so
no, we're not.
No, I mean, on any level, the respect has gone out the window. I mean, it just doesn't exist anymore. So it's either my way or the highway, and that's how people are. That's how they come to the dance of life, right?
But if we're reflecting, if we're receiving and creating a world around us that reflects our inner world, then where is it coming from? You know, we've talked a lot on this show about, well, I avoid these kind of people. I avoid these kind of people. But the how you do not become the victim or the perpetrator is looking at yourself. It is taking responsibility for what is inside you. Only you have responsibility for that. And it isn't about the people that are around you.
That's a real eye-opener.
You do have to make some choices. Well, this is a person I'm not going to spend some time, but that is taking responsibility. But it is not about that other person, because the second thing that comes out of that feeling of separation is blame. And it is blaming others. And whenever you do that, we're back to that feeling of separation, where we're living in judgment, fear, guilt, and wanting to blame others.
That's a massive eye-opener. But here's something I just want to touch on for a moment, and it's a little bit of an uncomfortable topic. It makes me uncomfortable even thinking about it. Does some of that judgment actually stem from organized religion? Is this the way we've been taught?
Yeah.
We need to get to know ourselves, but I also know there are a lot of people who are connected to, again, capital T, capital C, the church. If we wanted to spend time looking at ourselves, we would be told that's navel gazing and it's selfish, and who are we to take the time doing that?
Sure. Right. But when we do take that time, we have the knowledge inside of ourselves. That's what the three of us would teach. We do.
Yes.
Do we take the time to sit there? And I think, to be honest, it comes from much further back than organized religion. Your subconscious is primarily set by the age of four. So who are you spending time with before you're four? And I'm not blaming parents here. I am a parent, and that's something I live with. But
parents
I have to
will do the best they can with the tools that they have.
Right. They do. And then you keep doing better and you keep taking responsibility. But we do pass that on. And it has to be this cycle of learning and growing together to listening to our children when they say, that really hurt me. Yes, it did. You know, it's a cycle. We're not going to raise perfect children. There's no blame on parents. It's just a recognition and dealing with the pain when it arises.
Yeah. You know, there's a big, once we get to the last segment of the show this time, there's a big topic I want us to look at in terms of different religions and different mindsets and how we overcome judgment there. So just hold on to your thoughts for that bit. We've all been raised by parents with probably quite a different mindset. How did the three of us all break away from that and find who we are and step away from that whole judgment trap, as opposed to so many others out there who just do as their parents' oblique peers did? What made us different? And I'm not singling us out as the only four people in the world. There are millions like us, I know. Mm-hmm. But what makes the difference? How did we not just fall into those patterns?
You know, I'm a lover of personality tests, and I definitely feel, I don't want to let a personality test define me or somebody else, but I definitely feel there are certain personalities for which that is just easier. And I think the four of us here would all fall very similarly if we took a few of those together. Yeah. You know, there's things that are easier and more difficult for every type of personality. And, you know, I think we're kind of in the same area of the map there.
It's interesting that you mentioned that actually, Shona, because when I was looking for co-hosts for this particular show, you know, my gut would be, oh, let's find people with different opinions and let's get a bit of fire going. But for this one, I deliberately chose people who I thought wouldn't necessarily have exactly the same opinions, but would be able to step back from opinion and look at the bigger picture, because I think we need to drill down into this one further. And the trouble is, if we get people with lots of different opinions on a topic like this, we probably wouldn't get very far. We need to look at this. We need to turn the spotlight on this one, because I think it could have massive impacts for future generations. It really could.
Wow. The biggest thing, Taz, you say earlier here, which I wrote down, if we're not careful, society will keep us small.
Yes.
That is such a big deal, what you say there, you see?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we can dial that back again as children. So you, when you say what keeps us back, what holds us back, I think it is a question that certainly you can ask with all the school systems, the education, the religions, all of this. So the bigger question to play on your question, Taz, is why are some people able to break out of this pattern easier than others? Why can some people define the problem and other people just live in the problem? Do you know the answer to that?
Well, I know what it is. I know what the answer would be for me, and certainly from a lot of the people that I've coached and mentored over the years. And there seems to be a pattern that for those who go through challenging times, and of course that could be different for different people, the level and the circumstances, because let's not go into comparison, it can be completely different for all different people. But what seems to happen is when people hit that kind of breakdown, meltdown stage, when people have been through depression, nervous exhaustion, all these things that break us down to our core selves, then we realize something has to change and we rebuild ourselves back into the shape that either we were meant to be or that feels more comfortable for us. And that seems to be the pattern I've found. Those who've discovered themselves have been through some kind of experience where they've had to choose to lose.
Oh, it's the come to Jesus moment, Taz, basically. That's what it is. That's what you say.
Well, I didn't have anybody in sandals approaching me, but Jesus moment, if you like.
You know, I call that moment in my life the rock and the hard place moment. And I have come to truly love getting to that moment, because now when I'm like, this isn't going to work and this isn't going to work, what am I going to do? Now I know there's another way. And when I just let go of this crap, do my work to let go of it, there's another way. And I'm going to feel so free and so joyful, and it's going to totally blow my mind. I love coming to that point now. I mean, Sure, I probably grumble for a couple of days, and then I'm like, yes, I'm at that point, and I love it.
But you've got to get to the point where you know to unshackle yourself in the first place, right?
And that's just a process of doing it a million times. Yeah. Exactly, a million, and then another million, and then another million. It's just that taking responsibility. You know, we can even say society is going to hold us small. I don't think so. You know, there's that quote by Marianne Williamson about what we actually fear, and it's the light inside of ourselves. I think we can say society's holding me small, but the thing is, we have that inside. We know that inside. When we're small children, I remember being a three-year-old sitting in a sandbox, and of course, I grew up very conservative religious, so it appeared to me as God came to play in the sandbox with me and told me who I was. I may not have that same like visual now if that happened, but I knew when I was 3 years old. We have that within us. And then we start buying into the voices because there's a payoff, right? There's a payoff of acceptance or whatever. Yeah. And I'm not dissing that process. That process happens for all children as they grow up. That it's part of the task of childhood. It's part of the task of adulthood to peel off those layers. We don't have to feel bitter about it. You know, a lot of people get angry, and sometimes I do too. Why do I have to do this? It's just the task of adulthood. It's the task of growing in freedom.
You know, that's some beautiful stuff there, but again, it's taking a step back and just playing devil's advocate for a moment. If we use those phrases to a lot of the population, if we talk about the light inside, and hey, I know it's there, I'm with you, but we're going to get a lot of people throwing back, and I'm going to do my best Cartman from South Park voice here. That's all a bunch of tree-hugging hippie crap.
Oh, I've been there, Taz. I know. Yeah, this has taken me a lot of years to come to this point. I know that terminology doesn't suit everybody, but still, I was at the point where I thought that was a load of crap, and I did still one baby step at a time, and I see that with my clients. We're not at that place right away, but it's still inside you, and I know everybody hear that at this point. And when I couldn't hear it, it made me so mad to hear it. What are you talking about?
How do we deliver that message to people? And I'm not talking about, you know, forcing people to hear something they're not ready to hear. But how can we take these messages that so many of us who have, here's another one coming, found the light, that so many of us who are on that path, we know it inherently. But how do we take that message? How do we deliver that little seedling of hope, of courage, of light for the future to those who aren't prepared to hear that, to those who are so anchored into left brain.
Taz, we've got to be able to tell people that they can do it. Somehow they've got to convince themselves. They may not be able to. We've got to convince them that they can do it, that they can be less judgmental, that they can be more positive. And basically, sometimes that starts with just a simple smile. And on that message, we'll be back with more tree-hugging hippie crap in just a minute. Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome. This is what I wanted to talk about in the third segment of the show. And it's really what sparked me coming up with this topic for this amazing platform we have here. You know, there were a few weeks back, and just at the end of the show, the word evil came up. And I caused a bit of a stir because I said I didn't particularly believe in evil per se, or at least the way that
you
we
did,
are
yeah.
conditioned
right.
to believe
I remember
in
that show.
Evil.
I and cried for hours after that show ran.
Absolutely. Now, here's where the judgment versus discernment thing comes in. And this is one of the biggest, I just made up a new word, the biggest, heaviest issues I believe we have in our society today. Just bear with me for a moment on this one, because you might suck in your breath, you might be grinding your teeth, you might want to just reach through the airways and pop me on the nose for this one. But when we talk about things like terrorism, And we so easily band about words like, well, they're all evil.
Right.
Here's where, for me, that falls down. We're dealing with a group of people over there who, yeah, radicalized whatever words we want to put to them. But they believe with every ounce of their being that they are doing the work that is needed for a higher purpose. They believe that what they're doing is for the good of all.
True.
We're on the other side of that fence saying that's bad because what we are doing is for the good of all.
Right.
That's evil. They're on the other side of the fence saying those people over there in the West, they're evil and it will destroy the world. Now, all the time for me, I don't think we're going to solve this straight away. Who knows if we ever will. Mm-hmm. But all the time that we immediately just say that's bad, that's evil, on both sides of the fence,
mm-hmm.
we can't ever come to any solution. Because how can we judge that somebody is evil for believing wholeheartedly that the actions they are taking are for the greater good?
How can we do that?
I read a really interesting book, and I wish I could recall it now. It was about a Western man who sat down with different heads in Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a fascinating, fascinating book. When you take the time to step beyond that label of this person is evil, and you talk to them, and you actually figure out what their motivations are underneath that, it's breathtaking. But the thing is that it requires a lot of emotional skill and ability. It requires a depth to you to be able to do that. And we don't just start when terrorism lands on our doorstep. We have to start in the small areas of our life.
Yeah.
You know, build up that reserve, build up that ability and resilience to see beyond that label. It doesn't start on the big ones.
For me, to label something as something that's happened that we see as bad, for me, to label it as evil,
right,
whether we're talking about terrorism or whether we're talking about the kid that walked into the school with a gun, to label it just as evil is a massive, for me, it's a massive cop-out.
I don't know how to address this.
I don't know what to do with this, so I'm just going to label it evil and park it over there somewhere because it's beyond my control. We need to look
throw it away, lock it up.
So what do you call it, Tess? What
do you call it? So I don't have to engage. You know, it's so much more complex to engage in it.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
What do I call it? Well, it depends on the circumstances. If it's something like terrorism, terrorism. These are acts being conducted by a group of people who have such a massively different perspective to me that I can't even imagine trying to get my head around it.
Okay.
But both sides of the fence at some point need to try and get their heads around it, or we won't have a world left. With the kid with the gun, is it evil? No, that's somebody who is... It goes right back probably to what Shauna was saying earlier, somebody feeling so separated. There's something broken there that needed fixing that we, as society, haven't spotted and acted upon early enough. That's not evil. That's somebody who's messed up and needing help. And it didn't come quickly enough.
Yeah.
We've all had a hand in the problems, and we all need to have a hand in the solutions.
Okay. And the solution is not just saying they're evil.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about navel-gazing earlier and how many people consider it a luxury. And, I mean, there is a degree to where it's no longer useful. However, you know, I believe if you want to change the world, look at yourself. Start practicing those things in small moments. You do not know how that's going to ripple out and affect somebody. It's not even like an action you specifically have to take, or you specifically have to say to somebody, let me help you. You don't know how, when you change your energy and your frequency little by little, step by step, how that is going to ripple out and affect the people around you. Maybe that person who did walk into that school, you know, maybe someone who's doing some other horrific act, maybe just somebody who's having a terrible day, and just it keeps turning back inside.
Okay,
that's where that smile is so important. And Gandhi, that's what he meant by "my life is my message," and that be the change that came from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me throw some light on this in a completely different context and see if it makes more sense. So a few years back, I was being interviewed by an author called Paul Rowland. He writes a lot of kind of supernatural occultist books. And he was writing a book on ghosts and spirits, and he wanted to do this chapter on possession states. And something I don't talk about an awful lot in on this show is that sometimes my spiritual work takes me to the point where I'm working with people's energies. I'm doing clearances of buildings. I'm clearing people's energies, things like this. And this guy wanted to talk to me specifically about my views on, quote unquote, possession states. So whatever your views, just hear me out for a second, because I think this sheds a different kind of light on it. And he was saying, So surely, if ever a spirit is attached to a person, that is an evil entity that has hooked onto that person in some way. Mm-hmm. And I said, so hold on, if we just imagine for a second that spirit is all around us at all times, let's imagine that you are, for instance, walking through a shopping mall, mm-hmm. and there's a spirit of a young child who is lost, and this young child's spirit grabs your hand and doesn't want to let go because it has no one else, and you're an adult and you're a figure to latch to. Is that an evil spirit? And it just turned things around, and that's just looking at things in a completely different context. You know, we would so easily say something in the kind of mystical world like that, a spirit mm-hmm. that attaches to someone is an evil being.
Yeah.
But what if? Mm-hmm. And if we could just apply that kind of thinking to everything yeah. else that we're judging as evil, perhaps mm-hmm. we might see it in a different light.
You start mm-hmm. dismantling fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know, that's the bonus of it. You live in a world that's a completely different experience when you are not judging all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's your personal universe that changes because you mm-hmm. don't live in fear all the time. You don't have to make the benefit for someone else. Just do it for yourself.
Yes.
I think one of the reasons I feel so passionately about this subject is, of course, I've talked about it lots before. I'm a former journalist. I cut my teeth in journalism. And so, of course, what I was doing for a long time, essentially back then, was I was getting paid for being in judgment. I was getting paid for encouraging other people to be in judgment. You know, we all want the negative big headlines. Mm-hmm. And so now, having been through that kind of breakdown right. and rebuild and transformative process, now I can take a step back from that and think, wow, media particularly has such a part in creating the division, not just in society, but in our world as a whole. What can we do? How can we stop it?
There are some things we can impact, and there are some things we can change, ladies. Shauna, you say that, well, the positive energy, just let that ripple out into the world, and so on and so forth, yeah. Sadly, there are people who would like to have you dead. So you yep. can have all the positive energy you want, young lady, and you can throw that out in the kumbaya world that you live in. But the reality of the news cycle is that you might be killed by folks who have a different mm-hmm. thought theory.
Yeah.
Now, let me take this
be.
Further. That's correct. Now, because the people who died because of these other acts also were not planning on that at their moment of life or time. And possibly these people were very positive. And possibly these people pushed out positive energy into the world. Sure, it's a great theory, and I love it. But just don't close your eyes too long and walk down the street just a bit. So this is a very simplistic way of looking at the world that I think is highly troubling.
Of people feel that if to live that way, you sort of have to stick your head in your sand, you have to separate. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that's true. I just feel mm-hmm. like you have a very different perspective, so that once you take action, mm-hmm. I'm not dismissing taking action into the world, taking mm-hmm. action for right. yourself, taking okay. action against some horrific act. However, mm-hmm. you take action from a different space when you stop and you let go of judgment for a while. Your action is different, and it comes out with a different energy.
Okay.
And I actually didn't say don't put out positive energy all the okay. time. That is also a judgment. I just okay. watched a video about how we judge, you know, I can't be angry. That's negative. Mm-hmm. No. That isn't what I'm saying here. I feel angry. I judge people sometimes. I am yeah. not this Miss High and Mighty, positive, positive, positive
My
person
God,
all
Shauna,
the time.
Are you human? My goodness.
I'm just becoming more aware of what well, motivates me and what's behind my actions.
All right.
And it's yeah. not about sure. pacifism as well. That's sure. another mistake people
well,
make.
I
not
think
about
it crosses into that a bit, Taz. I really do. Because I
no,
think a lot
I was
of...
raised pacifist, I truly understand how that does not work in all scenarios.
No, it does not. Let me come back a minute now. I've listened to all you. Now you're going to hear Malcolm here a moment. Okay, so
Go
now
on,
it's my turn. Got it? Okay. So Taz, I want to talk to you about the evil word that you have out there, because the reason people define it as evil and that the fact that and it's interesting psychologically where you've all gone with the conversation. about evil and the temperament of people, and that we're judging them because of that, and they're working for a higher belief potentially, whatever that might be, whether it's the kid going into the school, whether it's the somebody did a bad deed out there or robbed somebody or stole or a terrorist to cut off heads or what have you. Here's the thing: the reason people define it as evil, it's very difficult for the human race to find words that can describe these kinds of actions.
It is.
So, well, let me finish to say to you that the only word that people, one of the words that they use is evil. Evil being, this is such a horrible deed that we classify it as evil. So, for instance, when the terrorist folks, the ISIS folks, and you mentioned Al-Qaeda and the ISIS, when they line up all of the people on the beach out there in the Middle East, and they literally take the knives and they cut their heads off all at once, so their heads fall onto the ground, and they have no more heads left, and the blood is everywhere, and this is like a line of dozens and dozens of men, young strapping men, that they crucify, and they crucify them because they're Christian. Okay, and because they don't want the Christians to live, because they are doing their good deed, they're answering to Allah, and Allah tells them to kill the other people because they're reading into a book that's called a Quran, and this is what happens with people who do this. Now, so there's a lot of definition there as to what that is, but really, evil is the word that people say, that's evil. Well, because that is a really evil deed and an evil thought. The same thing with the young man who goes into Parkland who massacres 17 souls. I mean, blows them away. That's an evil deed. It's an evil guy. So was he going to a higher... No, back to what you all were talking about. He's just screwed up.
No, that wasn't what I was talking about. I was talking about the differential between religions in terms of they both think they're working...
Well, the religion thing is a problem, Taz. The religion thing is a problem. And the problem with the religion thing...
There are people being killed by Christians across the world for being gay. So, you know, it doesn't matter which side of the fence we're on.
Right. Somebody's on a podcast somewhere else in the world talking about the horrible acts that the Christians were doing. It's certainly about the acts, but they're happening everywhere.
But here's the answer back.
Person, and it's how we are talking about everybody.
I hear
everybody.
You, but if you philosophically look at this, lady, Shauna, I hear the conversation that you're saying about Christians killing gays. Okay, so I hear that. But we're wiping the board too clean here. And the problem is there's an ideology up here. There's a philosophy, ladies. The philosophy does not belong in the Christian faith, Taz Thornton. The Christian faith does not tell you to go out to kill gays. It doesn't say that. It's not written in a book. It doesn't give you the permission to go do that. And so that's just an evil person doing evil stuff. Whereas on the flip side,
but if you speak to a true Muslim, they will say that, you know, going out and killing people like that isn't written into the Quran either.
It is in the Quran. It is absolutely in the Quran.
But it's the way it's interpreted again. Isn't
it? It's in the Quran. I'm telling you,
exactly the way it's interpreted by many.
It is not interpretation, ladies. It's in English. It's in English. Read the Quran. Read the first nine pieces. Nine verses. It's in the Quran. So it's not interpretation.
But there are, to use that word, evil things written in the Bible too. If you want to take it at face value,
but your
story of Sodom and Gomorrah, absolutely, that's what's going on.
It's all interpretation.
I'm not saying we have to interpret that story that way, that we should now go out and do this. I think that story has some interesting things to learn about it, but some people do interpret it that way.
They do, absolutely.
There's not a marching order. It does not give permission within the Christian faith to tell you to go and kill another person and that you're going to go to the Holy Land. It doesn't say that. It's not in there anywhere. It does say that in the Quran. So that's not judgment. That's not perceived powers. That's not... You're looking at something different.
But it's
still to
do with the way that ancient texts are being interpreted in the modern day.
Put your son on the altar and kill your son. Oh, but thank God he stopped me at the last minute, but I should have been ready to do it. And he may tell me to do it next time, and that's what I'll do.
But anyway, I think we're going slightly off topic here. But my whole point with using the word evil, I have slightly less issue with saying that something that happened, the result of it. It was an evil doing. It's exactly. immediately labeling a person as yeah. evil, when what we really need is to create the dialogue in the middle.
There are Again, some people you cannot reason.
I still think it's a cop out.
Okay, well, there are some people you cannot reason with.
What yeah? happened? What was society responsible for that brought this person to that point? Yes, it's wrong. The act's wrong. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the act that's evil, not the person. I yeah. missed another conversation, mm-hmm. another show, which would be fantastic.
And thank you for going there with me, guys. I know we've touched some really quite delicate stuff today, so thank you all of you for
yeah.
for going all out and be willing to go there.
Well, it's a yeah. good thing to think of these things and to think through them all. I think it's essentially a good thing, Taz, when we can help as many people as we can help, and we take a look at societal. But there's something in this world called self-responsibility as well. And somebody stepping up and being responsible for who they are. I know you get that, totally. But there's a lot to say about that. And sometimes, you know, there are people who just are twisted. I mean, to use a better word maybe for you, I don't know what you want to call it. Yeah. Maybe they're twisted. Their wires maybe don't connect quite much, sadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The world is full of people like this, unfortunately, and we have to be careful as we're walking down the street of who we're dealing and interacting with on any daily given basis. You know, human beings are very complicated people. And I've always said it, the species is really a strange group of people here, man. And there's a lot of beauty in the world, and there's a lot of great people, friends, but there's a lot of people that are suspect as well. And you've got to be careful for that and wherever
Absolutely.
It brings you. I like this idea of the judgment trap in breaking the hate cycle. I think it does start with all of us as people to do the right things in our life. I know that's how I live my life, in a very positive way and bringing positive energy to every thought. But, you know, we also have to be concerned. We have to be concerned that there's a lot happening in the world, ladies out there, whether it's, you know, these bombings that are happening in Austin, Texas, or you've got school shootings in Maryland today, and you've got them in Parkland, and you've got people doing horrific acts around the world. And yet there's some stronger voices out there that are of positive nature, like you all, that need to put that out there. And I think we should all step back and just really look at this, but be cautionary. And try to, you know, take the leap forward, Shauna, as you would say, in a positive way, and put out the good mm-hmm. energy and the good karma and all of the good things that we can ask for, hope for, and be part of. But I don't think we should let our guard down either. And I think we need to be careful with that, just like you lock your doors probably, or take care of your personal belongings probably. It's the same way you need to be careful with people
Good
out
advice, Malcolm.
In
Good
the
advice.
Never, never big world. So, friends, thank you for joining us. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure, the pursuit of many things here. I love these conversations. They're big, they're awesome, they're giganormous, we call it, right? Giganormous, maybe? For another word for you here. Thank you for being part of this year today here. Taz Thornton, Missy Crutchfield, Shauna Peters. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Thank you for the tree-hugging hippie crap. It's been a great production. To be continued.